Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. Podcast time, and this week got the one and only Friend Within. I've known Friend Within for quite a while, actually. I don't know how long, but quite a while. He is a bloody amazing producer, such a nice guy, and he's just released a new album, or his first, I believe this is his debut album, on Touring Records, and it's called Hope. So after this conversation, make sure you go check it out. Without further ado, Friend Within. And we're live. Friend Within, what's cooking, sir?
Hello, mate. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
Long time, man. Long time.
Yeah, that's a bit. I recognise where you are. I've been in that room.
Yeah. We didn't actually ever finish that record, did we? Or two records.
But we did. We did a couple. I put one out just under my name.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Come, that one.
Happy Friday, people.
Yeah. We did have a kind of deeper one. Which, yeah, didn't really finish that, did we?
Nah. It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you ever play it out?
I can't remember. Mate, I literally cannot remember it.
Yeah.
Can you?
No, I don't remember what it sounded like exactly.
No.
It basically sounded like neither of us, I think.
Yeah, which is never good.
Yeah, sometimes I find that happens.
With collabs.
You work with people and you end up making... I mean, it can be good. You end up making something that... doesn't sound like either of you.
Yeah.
But then you kind of wonder, well, what the hell are we going to do with it?
Yeah, I think it's also that pressure, isn't it? When you're in the studio with someone and you're like, we have to do something.
Mm.
And you kind of just like do whatever feels right. And sometimes it's not actually right. You should probably just like sit back and be like, nah, this just isn't it. But hey ho, how's life, man?
All right, I suppose.
Yeah.
Healthy, which is the main thing.
Good.
Family's all right. Yeah, you know, I live in a nice little quiet village. So,
can't complain, man.
Not too many stresses or anything.
Yeah, man. It's have you found, I don't want to talk about coronavirus too much, but how have you found it all?
Yeah, not too bad, really. Yeah. You know, I've been doing a lot of homeschooling. I mean, I've basically been sort of parenting the whole time, not being able to sort of do my job.
Yeah.
You know, obviously no DJing, no one can do that, but then not had loads of time in the studio either.
Yeah. Mate, are you sat on your exercise ball?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
What's the reasoning behind this? Is this for your posture?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I had... a year ago or something, I had like a really sore, like sciatic pain in my back.
Okay.
It didn't just kind of come overnight.
Yeah.
So I don't really know why it happened. got some physio in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, they obviously just say, you know, you got to keep moving. You got to exercise and move it. And then suggested an exercise ball just for exercises to begin with.
Yeah.
And then I'd been out of the studio for a couple of weeks. And then I came back here and sat in like my old chair. And I realized I was just sitting like so uncomfortably. I'd have my knee up by my chest and then the other one across it. And I just thought, this is clearly the reason why my back's gone. Now, even though I don't do an office job where you'd think people sit down all the time, but I basically do. And, you know, you're probably the same, aren't you? We sit in front of a computer.
Yeah, all day.
For hours on
end. Probably for longer than people that have an office job. Because we just, when you're in it, aren't you? And you're just not moving, no breaks, straight up.
So I just really liked it, you know, and sat on it. And I thought it might get a bit fatiguing, maybe. But it's actually better. Your posture's better.
Well, you build your core, don't you? And your body just kind of adapts to it. And it's so much healthier for you.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Unless
you see me bouncing around quite a lot on the screen.
Unless you have like one of those like proper expensive ergonomic chairs.
Yeah.
That they're like, you need to take a mortgage out to get one.
And I was looking at some of them. I was like, you know, shall I get a new chair? And then, you know, they're like £1,000 plus. Yeah. And this is like 10 quid from Decathlon.
Yeah, it's funny that we do that as human beings, right? Like £1,000 to make our back good and healthy, and we don't do it, yet we spend £1,000 on a synth that probably isn't going to do anything for us in the grand scheme of things.
I was thinking, you know, if it is £1,000, then it is something I'm going to be using for hours and hours, and it'll last you, I don't know,
forever.
10 years
forever.
So it would have been a good investment, but I thought, well, I'll give this a go first.
Cheaper option.
Yeah.
Feel that. So, album, man.
Mm.
I was listening to it earlier, and I listened to it when it came out. It's great, man. I really like it. It's for me, a house producer writing an album, I always get worried because I kind of don't want a continuous mix for 12, 14 songs. And I find some people, especially like quite big techno artists, just do like albums and it's just like, all right, mate, we get it. You've got a good kick drum, but you kind of don't move around. But on this album, it's very 4-4 orientated, but you kind of go through genres and styles in house music. And there's not like a single track that is like, okay, I'm bored now. Like, I've heard this before on this album. Like,
yeah, it's hard, mate. That's kind of what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I didn't really set out to make an album.
How did it start?
Well, I'd basically, you know, I've got this relationship with Tool Room Records, and they'd probably released like 3 or 4 singles of mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, their sort of style is, you know, they release, but literally a single, so it'll be one track. Very rarely do we'd have like remixes on there or even EPs. So I'd send them everything, and so just all these kind of other tracks that they didn't take, and, you know, probably weren't really exactly right for Tool Room. They were just kind of building up, and it was actually Tool Room that suggested, as I was like, look, we got like, there's loads of good tracks here that aren't singles for Tool Room, but, you know, why don't we, do you want to do an album?
Yeah.
Put them out as an album. I was, jumped at the chance.
That's cool. So you didn't actually, the album didn't come before the songs. The songs were there, kind of.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great.
You know, the majority of the tracks, you know, 8, 7, 8 or 9 or something, were kind of already pretty much finished.
Yeah.
You know, I did go back and change things and little bits and bobs. So that's why I kind of, when you said about, you know, it doesn't really repeat itself, the album. But it was, and I'd mentioned this before in my little quotes for the PR for the album, saying, you know, when all the tracks came together, it did kind of make a cohesive body of work.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel like it's one record and then the next record. It doesn't feel like you've just like put together a bunch of records. It feels like the album is kind of a cohesive piece of work.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if you tried that, or it was there like when actually like putting the album together, was it like, okay, this record kind of works well with the next record, or is it like, fuck it, let's just put them all in and just see what happens?
But there were tracks that didn't make it.
Yeah.
And then Matt at Tool Room, he's the main A&R guy. Mm-hmm. He put the track list together.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of took it home and, you know, listened to it over a weekend and was like, shuffled them around on his.
Okay, so somebody else did that.
Yeah, he was the. I think he did that track list, and that's how it remained.
Yeah,
I listened to it back and was like, yeah, that does work. I think I did want Holding On to be first.
Yeah, and I love that record.
He definitely wanted Touch the Sky to be last.
Mm.
But it's funny because that when he did say the story, when he put them all on a playlist on his computer, like Touch the Sky was already last.
Yeah.
So I think the first time he listened through, it was almost like it kind of fell into place.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
So did you find the like track listing process harder, or was it just something that you just weren't actually that fussed about, apart from like the specific Holding On being the first one?
Yeah. Wasn't that something fussed? I really thought of to begin with.
Yeah.
I knew there'd have to be a decision in the end.
Mm.
And then I was also lucky that, you know, it didn't feel like there were loads of tracks that were the same, like right next to each other.
Yeah.
And there was, yeah, just enough variation in the tracks for it to just feel like an album.
Yeah, man. Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the process? But I guess the process wasn't really an album process, like the generic album process that most artists go through.
Yeah, like, it's funny when Tool Room said, "Oh, do you want to? How about doing an album?"
Mm.
I was kind of thinking, do they mean writing like 12 new songs, or do they want to release the stuff I've already made and they're not signed? And I was like, I don't want to make loads of new songs. I've got loads that are unreleased. But no, they did mean all these ones that were unsigned. Well, yeah, that were unreleased of mine. So yeah, I was well chuffed because most of the work was already done.
what's the thought process of when the album kind of comes out and like all the promo and the leading up to it? Does it feel different to releasing a single? Like how is it? Like what's the difference?
Yeah, there was definitely more lead up time to it. How different is it? It's just because there's more tracks, there's more to speak about.
Yeah,
I suppose, and it is a bigger thing, and you know you'll get different types of press involved.
Yeah,
I suppose. There's more discussions on the artwork. Because a Tool Room sort of have their general letter T, but then with the artwork, with the album, there was specific artwork for it.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of have to do something a little bit more special, don't you?
Yeah, but everyone was still quite last minute. You know, it wasn't like the artwork was decided, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And there's even, like, on the day, you know, we had a sort of a timeline of when things were coming out.
Yeah.
Like, little videos and teasers. You know, even, like, the day before, some of the teasers were like, Lee, what do you think of this? And I'm like, want these 20 changes. And it's like, well, everyone's gone home now, so that's it.
Yeah, I feel like that's just the whole of this industry. Is like, I planned this whole year of releases like November last year and on my label, and like we're March going into April now, and there's still things that are just last minute, and you're like you have every intention to kind of keep it planned and like going on schedule, and it never does. Never.
Yeah. I mean, my manager always likes to make a spreadsheet of things, and he'll take a day or so to make this spreadsheet. He's like timelines or like goals, and like I pretty much just switch off when
he sends me. Spreadsheets are literally, it's only for managers.
Yeah,
I don't know any artist that I look at the money spreadsheet for me. Like that's the only spreadsheet that I kind of pay attention to.
I ain't got one of them. I need one of them.
Yeah, I'm surprised your manager hasn't got you one of those. Have a word.
No.
P&Ls.
He just emails me every month and, yeah. You had any money come in?
Yeah. This is your invoice. This is how much you owe me.
Yeah.
No, so
I love me manager. Love Sean. Pick up Sean.
Yeah, managers. Good managers are the best, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've only ever been with one.
Oh, really?
So that's Sean's amazing. Like, you know, I've known him for ages. And then he started off sort of managing like a label I had like many years ago. And then kind of got into just managing just me.
Yeah.
And then we moved to like 360 management.
Mm-hmm.
But then that came to an end. I think Sean never really let on at the time, but he didn't really like that whole being inside the big sort of corporate machine.
It's a big machine that as well.
Yeah. You know, Live Nation and all that. I mean, I did get some good opportunities from it. I did like iTunes festival support and Deadmau5. You know, that wouldn't have happened without.
Yeah.
It's sometimes just having like that email address, you know, 360.com at the end of an email address can get you in the door, can't it?
Well, that was when Dean Wilson was in, wasn't it? As well with Mark, and Dean was kind of managing Deadmau5 and all of that, and it's a huge company, man. Especially now, like Calvin, Will Smith, MK, massive. Absolutely massive. Yeah. Considering
have you had many managers then? Like, what's your?
Well, I'm on my third, and I won't have another. Like, I found my Sean, as you say. It's like I'm with Ryan. I've had two before. They were just car crashes, but I think if you can get somebody like what I've got now, or like what you've got, it just makes every bit easier, to be fair. Like everything gets done. We don't even need to worry about it not being done because it just gets done. And they just get what you're doing.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. They just, Sean knows me as an artist, as a person as well.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
The things that I will want to do and not want to do. And
he
probably knows, like, he'll tell me about something. I might moan about it for a day, but then the next day I'll be like, that's the right thing to do. I'm on board.
Have you been with him since day one as Friend Within, or were you with him before Friend Within?
Before Friend Within.
Oh, okay.
Damn. Yeah, so just, I made stuff under my real name. Yeah. The whole started Friend Within. So that's shortly after that is when we moved to 360, when things started going better for me.
Yeah.
With Friend Within.
How did the Friend Within thing start?
So just doing stuff before under my real name.
We should probably tell people that if you want.
Yeah, Lee Mortimer. There's a record up behind me. I don't know if, I mean, do you film, does this go out on video as well?
Yeah, it goes on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah. So I was doing, by the end, it was more kind of like electro house kind of stuff. But I mean, before that, I'd started off making just, Chicago kind of Jack in house stuff. And then
I used to play
house.
Your stuff. Which is weird.
Yeah.
When, like, you don't know. It's like Shadow Child, isn't it? It's like the kind of the career before the other career.
I was kind of similar to Simon, really, Shadow Child. He was doing, like, electro stuff, as was I, and we made a couple of tracks together.
Yeah.
But then it was someone like him, and then Disclosure coming through and Eats Everything coming through. That sound was just, like, I was well into that, and it was just stuff I was already into, already making and known for. I was just falling out of love with it, really. And it was going, EDM was just coming through, and it was all getting a bit noisy and just not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I just started, making some different kind of tracks.
Mm.
And I did have the intention of, keeping my original stuff going and Friend Within going. But I actually specifically remember, like, I turned on my computer one day going, right, I'm going to make a Lee Mortimer track. No, it's not going to be a Friend Within one. And I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I started for like 5 minutes and I was like, what am I doing? Mm. I'm not into this. And it was at that point, I was like, well, that's the end of that now.
Game on.
Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it? Because I think there's time. It's so hard to to kind of sometimes just change your sound as an artist, it's easier just to start from scratch because you know you learn so much as your career goes on, and you're like, I wish I knew that before I started.
Mm.
And when you start at Alias, you're like, I know all of it.
Hmm.
I know all the things in the mistakes. Did you find it easier with Friend Within, going from knowing what you've kind of learned as Lee Mortimer?
Well, I think when I started it, I had no idea that I could make a different style of music. You know, looking back on it, I kind of knew that I'd already learned a lot of production anyway.
Mm.
But I remember the tracks that I made at the time, I was like, every day I was making something, and I was like, I thought it was amazing. And I don't know how I did it. I wish I could go back to that time and knew what I was eating or drinking at that time.
Were you just having fun though?
Yeah, I was loving it.
That's the difference.
But then I didn't really know if it's weird because I just said the tracks were great, but I didn't really know if anyone else would like them.
Mm. But when you're in that process and you're actually writing records that you absolutely like, when you're really enjoying the process, you don't care if anyone likes them, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Because there's records that I've written well, that's why I started my label, because I'm like, none of these labels are going to want to sign it because it just doesn't sound. It's the kind of the situation that you were in with Tool Room. You have all these records and you're like, well, I have this thing with Tool Room and it works really well, but I have a bunch of music that they're not going to put out. Luckily, you have you can put it out for an album, but there's records that I write that I absolutely love and I don't care if anyone likes them.
Yeah.
Because I love it and I want that music to be out. But there's so many record labels that just don't allow you to do that.
Yeah, they have their own sound, don't they? And, you know, Tool Room releasing something every week.
Every day, isn't it?
yeah, loads of massive compilations and things. But yeah, but with the early Friend Within tracks, I used to, the first gigs that I was getting with Friend Within, I was like, well, I'm just going to play all my own stuff because I'd never heard it out before.
Yeah,
I don't know what the reactions are going to be like. And for the first couple of years, I literally did just play all Friend Within tracks. I think the first gig I had was only like a 45-minute set.
Perfect.
And I had like 50 minutes worth of music.
Slow it down a little bit.
Yeah. I was like, I can't do long mixes. I'm going to run out of tunes. And it was great. And yeah, I was kind of thinking, why didn't I do it before? Because I'd had loads of tracks previously, but always played other people's music. And it was really liberating just seeing the reactions. And yeah, but even though I was kind of playing almost the same set for the first year.
Yeah.
You know, no one else had heard these tunes. They were all, you know, a vast majority was still unreleased. And, you know, it was all different cities, so like, who's going to come to a different show to see me play?
Yeah, I love that.
So that was great.
Opening
with the same track.
Yeah.
doing the same little tricks. But it never got boring from my point of view.
I think there comes a point when if you're entertaining the crowd, it doesn't really get boring.
Yeah. I still love DJing, playing other tracks, but I am maybe considering doing it, you know, after lockdown.
Do it, mate.
Especially with the all these album tracks.
Yeah.
You know, if I've got an hour and a half set, I can play the album and, you know, eight other tunes.
Well, I think that's the thing. Nowadays, I think there's two types of DJing, isn't there? There's like the resident DJ that kind of used to be the thing in the clubs where like people would go to the club because they know the DJ is going to be dope and it's going to be a proper like good night just because the resident's amazing and they'd be playing all night long. And now it's headline culture. Everyone wants to go and see a certain person, probably because of their song that they like, not because of they know them as a good DJ or whatever. So it's almost like you're kind of turning into a band where you don't go see the Rolling Stones and they just play a Beach Boy set. Like, it just doesn't happen, does it?
Yeah.
So if you're doing shows and it's an album tour, you have to play it, man.
Yeah.
That's what they're expecting, right?
I think. Yeah. And there's a lot of those ones that wouldn't have been played out.
Yeah.
That much. I mean, yeah, some of them will be, I think probably started a couple of years ago. Some of them will have got earrings out. Mm. But yeah, I think I'm considering doing it.
Do it, man. Be good fun.
My manager's been saying about doing a live. I mean, I've got all these synths behind me. I do like the occasional synth sort of jam.
Yeah.
On, you know, just stick it on Instagram TV on me bouncy ball.
With A-Track giving you shit.
Yeah, I know.
How did that start?
I think Sean thought of that one. That was just, you know, promo for the track. Do you want to just like roast each other? if anyone's not seen it, we basically A-Track and I just take it in turns to roast like videos of each other doing stuff. I went through like some tweets of his as well, just ripping the piss out of him.
The one when the first one that he roasted you, I was cracking up. So good.
There's a lot to speak about. I was there like bouncing around in me shorts and yeah, looking like I wasn't really doing much on the synths.
On your exercise ball.
Yeah.
How would the live set kind of work?
Yeah, I don't know. See, I don't know if I'd want to do it because I don't know if I'd be able to do what I would want to with just like one pair of hands. I guess it would be, just like some synths and a drum machine and then maybe try and incorporate some of the album tracks, like, you know, a cappellas. Or I did do a little synth jam for like the promo for the album doing that. So I took like two or three a cappellas.
Yeah.
And then replayed the bass line on a synth for Holding On. And then, you know, made sure they were in the right key, changed them beforehand for the samples. Yeah. So maybe something like that.
It's tough, the whole live show, isn't it? Because for me, I'm like, live is live. It's not like about getting Ableton and kind of pushing the button. For me, it's like it has to all be played live. But with electronic, it's so hard to make it live.
Mm.
Everyone's got a backing track.
Yeah. Did you see the bicep thing at the Saatchi Gallery?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it, though.
Yeah. I saw like little clips of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's obviously two of them. You know, and it sounds great. But, it is just...
running off a laptop.
And it's the same with, you know, the Chemical Brothers when I've seen them play. You know, they are just in front of some synths. And, you know, there's a lot of concentration involved. You know, and I don't know if I'd want to really do that. It's like, I've got to do this at the right time. Make sure this, you know, stays in key. And, you know, because I don't really have much music or any musical training. You know, I can't play the piano or anything.
Yeah.
I barely know like what scales are or, you know.
Yeah, I feel you.
So I can't like just go stick a drum beat on and, you know, just play along with it. I can't do that.
Yeah.
No, you know, I know my way around this sequencer I've got here a little bit and I could get better at it. But then it's like, you know, how would you incorporate, you know, big elements from the album tracks? You know, they'd have to be backing track in some way.
It's hard, isn't it? Because even with Bicep, I don't think all of that's... they have a laptop. And I don't know how much of that's backed up. I know with the Chems... I think a lot of that's just ran off a laptop, but they have full control over everything. So if they want to go and do their, like, go on a tangent, they can.
Yeah.
But of course, everything's synced up with the visuals there as well. So you're kind of still like locked in on certain things.
Yeah. I saw them at Alexander Palace and it was amazing. Yeah. The visuals are stunning. And I did sense at one point, they had like a moment to jam. You could just hear it as well. You know, it wasn't exactly like the single, you know, what the track sounds like is on the single. And I really enjoyed that bit. And you could kind of, almost like you could see them doing a bit more. I mean, they were miles away. I was right at the back. There was almost like they allowed themselves time to just go to do whatever they want. But I'd love to see more of that. You know, I'd love to be good enough to be able to do something like that. Just turn up. You know, like Kink is the one, isn't he? You know, he's the ultimate.
Hans Biger. Have you seen him?
No.
He's like, does crazy techno stuff. Just check his studio out. It's ridiculous. It's like,
I'll have to have a look.
That whole
I love a studio tour.
It's like that whole wall is like just modular, and you're like, oh wow, you didn't have a teenagehood. You literally just stayed in your studio the whole time. He does a lot live. I guess Stefan Bodzin does pretty much everything live, although it's all run through Ableton. He's pretty much controlling everything.
I love his stuff.
So I don't know about in a club for me. I don't know if I'd want to watch that live, but driving or just like listening, I'd love it. It's amazing.
Yeah. And with the sort of live act, you know, you tend to be more just standing there sort of looking. Yeah. I mean, that's a bit more what DJing's like now as well, isn't it? Everyone's standing facing you.
Yeah.
But with live stuff, there has to be more of a visual element.
You have to even like,
if I'm up there on my family sitting on my bouncy ball, I'm with me synths
doing
in front of a wall of synths.
Doing Aphex Twin, where he just like, wasn't that like famous story when he just came on stage and just lied down and just like pushed buttons for like he didn't play a single song apart from just made weird noises for like a whole hour and a half. And just like, wow. I don't think we could get away with that.
No.
I think people would want their money back.
You know, I'd want it. It'd have to sound really good as well. You know, I spent so long making my track sound as good as possible to just go out and, you know, take a drum machine and it's got no kind of effects on it or compression or sidechaining and things like that.
I was listening to the Zane Lowe interview with Nils Fram.
Mm.
Do you know Nils stuff?
Yeah.
When he goes out live, they spend the whole day before the live show fixing the venue. So any rattle or anything, the venue has to get it fixed. So they're like literally spending hours just like pressing like sub notes to see if anything's rattling, seeing if like certain lights are on and off, like if the fridge in the bars are making noises, they have to turn them off. And you're just like, the attention to detail is unbelievable. But if you think about it, if you're doing something live and you're like putting your whole heart into it, you don't want a fucking flappy speaker kind of that everyone's hearing. Everyone's coming to see you play the best sound ever.
Yeah.
And the hum of a fridge in the background when you're playing some like beautiful piano music, no one wants to hear that. But it's the thought behind it. It's like, how do you even think about that?
Like,
it's pretty amazing.
It reminds me of, like, you know, we've been backstage in lots of places, haven't we, and venues and in basements, under stages, and the amount of things that rattle down there is insane. Or anyone like going to the loos in the club, you know, they know that there's so many other noises going on because of the music. But yeah, that's great attention to detail.
Yeah, his stuff's amazing. He like travels with an organ, and they have to they have to put the pipes in another room, and you're just like, I wouldn't want to know the cost of his live live thing. It's unbelievable.
So I'm already thinking of like cost of doing a live show, or, you know, we want to get a flight case and the ins and outs of doing it.
And time. You need to pay. You almost need to pay somebody to do it with you. Because if you think about it, like, somebody else needs to take a bit of pressure off and know kind of more about the equipment than you to a certain extent, or know bits that you don't know, because anything can go fucking wrong. And if one person, I think that's why I was talking to Steve Dubbs, who does all of the chem stuff, and he, like, back in the day, they just used DAT machines, just like on in the background. My old manager was actually Moby's manager back in the day, and she used to, like, he was doing live shows, all the team would have to, like, make sure that the DAP machines don't fall off the table just in case, because you're like, so I think with live, you've got to have a good team around you to kind of do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do all the things that I wanted to do, no visuals. And I mean, I'm already talking myself out of it, but I did say this to my manager as well. It's something I'd like to be able to do, but I don't know if it's worth the effort. I don't know. And yeah. Maybe as part of it, which is it's a bit like, well, let's give something else that people might want to book. Mm. I was like, is that the only reason you're doing it? Yeah. It's like just to be, come and book me.
Mm.
Whereas really, I still love DJing.
I like what Eric Pridge has done with the whole visual thing. It's kind of like he just does his own thing, and then he's brought somebody like another team on to just make it look amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of clever, because he's not trying to play live. He's not trying to do anything different apart from just make the experience better. That would be amazing to do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the visuals that he's got just seems to be another level now, doesn't it?
I wouldn't want to know how much that thing costs.
Yeah. And then, that's a big thing right now, isn't it? How it looks online, people taking videos, and that's how DJs kind of get to be big now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look at me playing at this big show. It's weird the way I've noticed now with like live streams. Everyone's got like this amazing background now. I mean, I've got a bit of it now. Like I've put the camera where you can see the synths. And so the live streams are all like, people getting green screen up there.
Yeah.
But then when gigs start again, the camera will be behind the DJ looking at the crowd. See, it's all about how can I look the best?
How can I look shit hot? It's all branding, isn't it, at the end of the day? It's all how to sell. It's not actually like, this sounds awful, but how much of it is actually about the music now when it comes to live stream?
Yeah.
Because I think live streams now, obviously you watch your favorite artist. I haven't done a live stream, but it's kind of just, that's why I haven't done one, is because I'm like, I don't really want to play to people that are just in their kitchen, like doing the dishes. I don't know.
Probably depends on the music. I mean, your stuff has got to play in a club, haven't you?
Exactly.
Exactly. The sub frequencies on there and things.
Yeah, you're not getting that on a TV speaker, are you?
Yeah. But then you could maybe see it as an opportunity to play stuff that you wouldn't usually play,
Yeah, maybe.
It is fun. I'd recorded, they weren't all like live, but I went through my old record collection from near the start of lockdown.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't want to, I had no desire to make any new music. I was like listening to old stuff, and that kind of made me feel comfortable again, like the world was normal. And then I thought, I'll just go through my record collection and from my A to Z, do a mix for every letter.
Yeah, I saw them. It was a nice concept, isn't it? Some people have smashed the live streams, though. Some people have just like come out of being like not successful, but like not full-time in music to full-time in music because of live streams.
Who's done that?
That Suet guy. Have you seen Suet?
Don't know.
He's the guy that, his stuff's fucking hilarious, if I'm honest with you. But he's the one that gets like a Pioneer kind of desk thing and then puts it on straps and DJs around the town. Yes. He smashed it.
Yeah,
I had a LP Giob, had her on the podcast the other day, and she's from lockdown, her stuff's just gone like this, and it's because she's been doing streams left, right and center.
Right.
Amy L, one of my mates, she's exactly the same. Like, not released that much music during lockdown at all, but she's just been streaming twice, three times a week. and just her everything's just gone skyrocketed. I think Sophie Tucker did a, they've done a stream for 365 days for the whole, every single day.
And wow.
They were huge anyway, but now they're just on another level.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, I did a few, but not that many.
Dedication.
But I did like recording all my records. It was just good to go through the records again.
Yeah. Was it vinyl? Did you get the vinyl out?
Yeah, yeah. So I had to go into the garage. I had to fix one of my record decks because it was always one of the like the audio cables was a bit dodgy at the back.
Yeah,
and I had to go and get them serviced.
Okay, you didn't.
I was trying
yourself.
To find somewhere to get them serviced. I tried to fix it myself, and it lasted about a week. But then it finally gave up the ghost.
I love it,
but it was good to have them serviced again and
back working.
Good to go through the old records.
I bought some new decks in America and then lockdown happened and I had to fly back to the UK. So they they turned up a week before I left. So they've just been sat there. I'm just like, oh, this is a nightmare. But
are they the new CDJs?
I got the new Pioneer mixer and I got the Pioneer turntables.
Oh yeah.
They're pretty much replica of the Technic 1210s. But yeah, I just want to start playing records again. Just nice. Not like even to DJ. I don't want to DJ records. Like I do not want to lug a vinyl bag around at all ever again. but I want to just like collect a record collection. And living in Detroit, there's some fucking amazing record shops. Like all the old Motown stuff is still there and it's just like this is amazing.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like DJing with records.
Mm.
I mean from when I started doing it, like the letter A, you know, and I was loving it. Just the feel of like the decks.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's not much else like it. And the way you have to mix as well.
You have to pay attention.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It takes you 5 minutes to get it in time.
Yeah.
And then that minute or whatever mixing it in is like the scariest moments of your life.
Yeah.
You don't want to touch the record because it'll make like a wobble noise.
Mm.
But it is pretty special. But all the records are back away now and I'm quite glad they're away. I don't need them out again.
Well, I think also that was the interesting thing with playing with vinyl was that you could only kind of take a certain amount to a show. So you're like, this is my set. And maybe an extra like 20, 30 minutes. I can't go anywhere. Like maybe I just play the records in different orders, but this is kind of my set.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays you're like, oh, I think the new decks, you can literally like type on them. They're like, have you seen the 3000s? You got a
bit. I'm over there, mate.
Lovely. How are they?
Oh, mate, they are so good.
Yeah.
Because I'd never actually owned any CDJs before.
Yeah.
It's partly why I had to get the record decks out for the live stream things to begin with. And I knew that they were coming out. I kind of knew someone who'd said the next ones are coming at some point.
Mm.
And I bought the mixer first. And then, I thought, I'm just going to, even though there was no gigs happening anytime soon, I thought, I'm just going to splash out. I'll get them as soon as they come out. Because then I'll be able to enjoy them for longer rather than waiting for, you know, lockdown to finish and think, well, now I can
do it.
Probably makes sense to get them. I thought, but I'm just going to get them. Oh, they are so good. The screen on them is amazing. The touch screen is brilliant. There's things, I mean, I think you could do it on the old ones, but there's something like beat jump where you can literally like jump forward in the track. Yeah. And I'd never really used that before, but it's so good.
Handy.
Yeah, and even like, and again, I think this was on the previous mixer, like the, I can't remember what it's called, something like.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Something cue where you can, you basically listen, you can listen to the track you're playing in your headphones, and you can like skip forward.
Oh, really?
In the track to see what's coming.
What, without it skipping forward?
Yeah. And you can also, so you, when you're picking the track on the screen, there's a little waveform next to each track. You can click anywhere on the waveform of any track that's not playing and listen to that track.
Wow.
So instead of having to select it, cue it up on the other channel on the mixer and then like skip through to think, what was that track? You literally like click on it and anywhere in the track and like scrub along the track.
Oh man, it makes such a difference. Can't wait to play.
Such a difference, because you know, we always like download tracks like an hour before we got a set. You go through your promos or something.
Yeah.
And you, as soon as you turn up, you forget what they are.
Yeah.
So just having that function, which again, I think they were available on the previous mixer, but it's, yeah, I've never used it before. And just having them at home, like I can actually try out things that I wouldn't want to attempt in a club without having practiced. Maybe that's
the difference between vinyl and CDJs, though, isn't it? Like before, when vinyl, you literally just, you knew the record because you played it so many times in your house. And beforehand, and you kind of just like understood the record, where now you're like, well, what's coming up?
Yeah.
Where did that vocal come from? That wasn't there like yesterday. Yeah,
yeah, no. It's a good point that. And the way that records were made, like they had like longer intros, longer outros.
Yeah.
You know, now, like I was just going through promos before I was on this call. You know, tracks like to start immediately. You know, it's straight in. Which is fine, because you can just loop it up, and I don't mind that. It's good for DJing, but yeah, the way they were made before,
it was made for the dance floor, wasn't it? It wasn't made to stream.
Yeah,
that's the difference. Is the way that we will listen to stuff. Not everyone, but a lot of people just don't want to listen to a minute and a half of a kick drum.
Yeah. Nice. And now you get like the full 6 minute version of a track is called the extended version now, and then the original is like 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, which is weird. Did you do anything like that for your album?
There are edits. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it's all, on Spotify. It's just all the edits.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even say like, you know, edit next to it.
I don't like having the word edit next to it. I feel like it kind of devalues the track, because I think you're writing two types of records now. Like, I don't know about your process when you're making a shorter edit for Spotify, but it's completely different record for me. And how it's listened and everything is completely different to when you're going to play it in a club. How do you kind of like write your streaming edits, or is it literally you just take the intro and the outro off and you're like, just got the body of the work? Or do you like cut things out and move it around?
I mean, it is mainly get rid of the intro and outro. Not much else goes on. I mean, I might get rid of bits in the middle, but not a huge amount. Yeah, it is just like chop bits out.
Radio really. Edits are weirder now. I don't know if you've done anything like that. Like, they want the record so short, like 2.5 minutes. And you're like, how?
Yeah.
How can this record be 2.5 minutes? The breakdown's 2 minutes.
Yeah. Especially with like, maybe your kind of stuff with math. I mean, I do big breakdowns as well. Yeah, but you can't, you can't get all the ideas I want in 2.5 minutes in a tune, and to want people to dance to it.
Yeah. Do you stress when you release music?
No. It's great when the album came out. It's interesting seeing the reactions from the promo you send out or whatever, but everything's been really, it was only like one comment on the promo sheet that I think someone didn't like it. And I'm like, why do you bother reacting if you don't like it? But, you know, there's hundreds of other ones that were really good.
Yeah.
I was well chuffed for it to come out, and it did get delayed a little bit with COVID. It was, you know, would have been sort of end of summer last year. So, you know, we sat on it for a while. So you just, desperate for it to come out.
Yeah.
But I was well happy for it to come out. And then just to have like an album that someone can go and find on Apple Music or wherever. And it's like, this is me. Go to click on that and you got 12 tracks. Instead of having to go and search for things for Friend Within things or click on a Friend Within playlist. This is like, this is my style.
It's like it's definitely an achievement for an artist to just be like, have a body of work. And I think the way streaming has kind of shaped the industry is like kind of stopped that from happening more so. And hopefully it comes back. I'd love it if more people come back.
With
albums. I'd love to do one. I'm just too much of a, I think about it too much. I'm like, I want it to do really well, so maybe I shouldn't do it, because what if it doesn't? But it's,
you can't look at it like that, can you? Yeah. You just gotta
do it.
Yeah, put things in there that you want to be in there, and just hope people like it, and don't beat yourself up if it doesn't. So I imagine you set yourself goals and you think, what's the point in releasing this if it's not going to be Beatport top 10 or number one on the techno chart or something. But sometimes you just got to stick it out there so you can move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was what was good about the album. No, I basically got rid of a load of tracks that were sat on my hard drive that I was losing sleep over, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, who's going to sign these tunes? They're too good to just sit there. And now they're all out in the world. And that's the best place for them. You know,
You're right. You are right.
Yeah, so just make what you want to make. And, you know, now you've got your own label as well. You can literally do whatever you want.
It's the most perfect thing for it.
Yeah.
To be fair, like, we were doing plans for this year, and there's been this record that everyone likes, and I'm like, you know, when you're just like not 100%, and I'm like, nah, it's not coming out, people, sorry, like, I've got to put, we're putting this one in instead. And it's just so nice to do that, because you can never do that with another record label. Like, you sign the dotted sheets and it's done, and got to wait 6 months for it to come out, and and that's it.
Yeah. You make your own schedules and, you know, tie them in with tours and things.
And it takes the pressure off signing records, because I still sign records to other labels, but it just takes that pressure off of like, I need to sign this record because I need music out.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, I'm only signing records because I absolutely love the record label and want to kind of be part of that label. And I feel like the music's right for that label.
Yeah. I think labels are probably a bit less important at the moment. It's not as important to be like on this specific label.
It's because they're not throwing parties.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, true.
Labels are brands now, aren't they? Really? Like, there's very few labels out there that you release a record just because they're good at releasing records. Like, it's what else do you get from signing to a record label, if you know what I mean? Like, let's say, for instance, like Tool Room. Like, Tool Room throws parties all around the world, if you know what I mean. If you put a lot of records out with Tool Room, you're probably going to be doing some Tool Room shows and going to be playing in other places. Hot Creations, Drum Code, like, Defected. They all kind of do the same thing, but now there's no shows. It's like, well, what else can they offer, really?
Yeah.
Apart from reach.
Yeah. I mean, Tool Room do have a really good reach, and, you know, we've got good. Yeah, they've had a lot of success with radio, things getting onto radio, and Yes, they have those relationships, which is great.
Yeah, they kill it.
I think you can just put stuff out. Like if I'd have released the tracks that were on Tool Room on a smaller label, would they have done as much? Probably would, I think.
With your name, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, so. It's tough, isn't it? It is tough because I'm all for people starting their own labels, really. Like anyone that talks to me that's like, I'm thinking of starting a label, I might do it. It's the best thing ever because it's you can do what you want. As long as you do it well, it has to be done well. Mm. It has to be done correctly, as in everything has to kind of come together as one. You can't just be doing willy-nilly stuff. Has to be a bit of a plan to it. But it's the best feeling ever, man. Love it.
Yeah, I did have I've kind of had a couple of labels along the years, and I did have one at Warehouse Music in the Lee Mortimer days.
Yeah.
That did do really, really well. Mm. I got a lot of, I ended up being like a Ministry of Sound resident off the back of that, those sort of times. Signed like a track by, I had like, before he was like Low Stepper, and then Kai from Gorgon City.
Yeah. FOMO.
I nearly, like, I was close to signing his first ever track, but it had already been signed to something else, and he sent me but then the next couple that he put out, I signed.
That's dope. I think that's the thing. It kind of creates a community, doesn't it? Out of it, and you can kind of have your own. I haven't signed it. I haven't released anybody else's music yet. But we'll get there. It's a lot. It's a big responsibility, isn't it?
When I started the label, that was when like digital sales were actually quite good.
Yeah.
you
can make money.
You'd make some all right money off it, and the artists would, I just did like a 50-50 split on sales basically.
Yeah.
So I probably should have put more in my own pocket, I think, what's typical for most labels.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know about running a label. It's just, I used to have to like individually send them up to like Juno, download and Beatport.
Yeah, there wasn't distributors around then.
No, but it was good. I had no people that
everywhere.
Directly at Beatport and Juno, and it was great. It was another one called Stompy. Remember that one?
Yeah, I do remember that one.
US one.
Yeah, I do remember that.
That one was really good. They sell loads on there.
They do, yeah. It was very US based as well, wasn't it? There's a lot of Dutch Chicago shit on there. And then
I used to buy a lot of Dirty Bird stuff on there. Mm.
Old Dirty Bird stuff was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah. It's just like nothing else that existed.
I miss it, man. I miss like waking up and going on Beatport or something and seeing a new Dirty Bird release and going, oh my God, this is amazing. There's not much. Do you get that anymore with anything?
Like a real moment when you think, wow, what on earth is this? No, not really.
I wonder why. Why is that?
I reckon there's a lot more music out there.
Yeah.
But I think it's easier to make music now. Mm. And I think a lot of the popular dance music now is very simple. I think people have worked out what you have to do for something to be effective on the dance floor.
Yeah.
And it's not that much. And especially for it to look good in a video online at a club, snare roll. And then a vague bass line drops in with a weird noise or something. And then Fisher puts his hands in the air and that's it.
It's soul destroying sometimes. Not Fish, obviously, but like the amount of just the same music out there.
Yeah, I was just, like I said, going through promos before and it was like this compilation EP of something and literally every bass line sound was exactly the same.
Mm.
People have figured out how to make it. It's probably just a preset, and people are signing it and releasing it.
You can buy presets for it. Like, yeah. I was I was on Instagram. You know, you get those like swipe up kind of advertisers. And I was going around and it was like, make a track like Fisher Losing It. Mm. Get the bass line. And you could literally just buy the bass line. And you're just like, oh, come on. It's just like, they must have made so much money just on that preset, because it's just like everyone's using it.
Yeah. I mean, I use loads of samples in my stuff. Like, the album is full of Splice, you know.
Splice is great. Splice is great.
I actually love it. But it's like, what, it's what you do with it.
Exactly.
You know, and even one of the tracks on the album, someone messaged me saying, I've just heard this sample on an advert.
Yeah.
it wasn't my tune. And I'm like, yep, splice.com.
Yeah.
but it depends what you do with it. It's, yeah, not just churning out. I never see the point of making a track that sounds like one that's number one on Beatport.
No, because that's number one for a reason. It's like,
yeah.
To be fair, for lockdown, I haven't bought a single record. I haven't even looked to see what's out for a year.
Mm.
Like, I've just gone. I was like, okay, I can't DJ, so I'm not gonna look at anything musically. Yeah. Like, I couldn't tell you what. Obviously, you hear like when the record, like a big record, comes out, and like you can't get away from it because it's everywhere. But like, I can't bring myself to buy music at this moment in time. I'm just like, what am I buying it for?
The top 10 hasn't changed, lad. Still, number one will be a new version of an old track.
Yeah. Oh, mate, there's so much of that. Something. There's so much of that. We both can't really say much because we've both done reworks of big records.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's doing it in a different way, right?
Mm.
I think there's doing it in a tasteful way. And is doing it in a way that is not tasteful, that gets you a Beatport number one. But, hey,
yeah. How do you discover new music? Do you like? Because I've been listening. I basically had Spotify on for the whole of lockdown, and however, you know, I come at it from like from the artist point of view, and then a listener point of view. Yeah. And you know, it's great for the listener, and for the artist in some ways, because it's great for discovering new music, but you know, you hardly get paid as an artist.
Yeah.
I've just loved having on, you know, just random playlists. And
so do you just let it play and just be like, oh, what's this? And then this is fucking great.
You know, I'll often start with, you know, one track that I like, and then go to, you know, play radio from that track. And it's really good at that.
Mm.
It does start to repeat at some point.
Yeah.
You know, discovered, you know, and when something's out on Beatport or Juno, it's on Spotify, Spotify or Apple Music straight away. So yeah, I've discovered loads of decent stuff.
I because I do my playlist every week, so I like search a lot on Spotify for that.
Mm.
So I go through a lot of like, so I go on an artist page that I like, and or like I put, let's say for instance, like one of your records, I put one of your records on, and then I go on your page and then be like, artists fans also like, and then go on that and then just kind of search through. That's kind of a good way.
I usually let it just choose for me.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a good way of doing it.
I haven't really been searching. I've kind of just like, maybe I should.
There's still been good stuff released.
Yeah, there has.
You know, that hasn't stopped, I think.
Mm. I think I just kind of like took a step back from it all and was like, kind of need a break. Because I'd just done open to close tour. So I'd been playing for like 3 months, like 7-8 hour sets. And I was just like, I don't want to do music anymore. Like, don't need to go and search. Because I do love the concept. Like, every weekend, I love on the Wednesday or Thursday going on Beatport and, like, digging for, like, a good couple of hours, 2-3 hours of just, like, trying to find good music.
Mm.
I don't listen to my promos. I'm really bad at that. I can't. I wish when the InFlight app, which people that don't know, InFlight is like where you get sent all your promos. I wish I actually didn't accept every record label and just only accepted the record labels I liked at the time. But when did InFlight come out? Like 10 years ago, maybe? I was like, it was like a little teenager. I was like, just accept everything.
I have basically a blacklist of some labels, or you don't always get them direct from the label, you know, there'd be like promo companies.
Yeah.
And if something's like particularly bad, I'll write it down on like a little notepad on my phone. And then I won't like unsubscribe. But then if something else comes up, I'm like, what the hell is this? I'll go back onto the text document, and if that name is still up there, then I'll delete it. So it has to get like two strikes and then they're gone.
It's like an agent when the promoter doesn't pay, you just get blacklisted.
It's a good way to doing it, but yeah, keeping on top of them all.
It's
daunting as well, isn't it? When you get so many, you think, well, where do I start?
But then the thing is, as somebody that runs a label, I just sent a promo out the other day using InFlight, and I expect everyone to check the record out and feedback. Yeah. And then I'm like, well, I can't expect it if I don't do it myself. So for the people that want to listen and have it, then go for it. But I promos changed a lot from how it used to be, from like vinyl promo, CD promo. I remember in like being a resident in Ibiza, you kind of every week you just get a fuck ton of CDs, and you'd have to like actually physically write out the feedback. And then there was like exclusive promo. I remember when exclusive promo came out on Fat Drop, and exclusive was like the most exclusive promo company ever, and like I was never cool enough to get on there. And then Listen Up and Your Army kind of just took over, and now we're here.
I remember Your Army were massive. They were massive in the sort of my days as Lee Mortimer, you know.
Were they?
The Fidget House stuff and like Crookers.
Was Christian still doing it then? Did he start it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was him basically.
They've done amazing.
Yeah.
They're like, they've got American team now as well. It's crazy.
Great to see that happen, you know.
Yeah, it's so nice to see
coming through and then getting to the top and then staying there and
growing and bringing people on with them and kind of, it's so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. So what's the plan with the album? Is there a plan for an album tour, or is there when we can, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing set in stone, I suppose. We'd love to do something. Mm. Or a launch party, you know.
June the 21st.
Yeah. We just got to wait and see, really.
Yeah.
Hopefully do, you know, another single or two maybe from it.
Yeah.
And maybe get some remixes, you know, standard kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
But there isn't, there's nothing, anything definitely going to happen just yet.
Sweet. So before we go, how can people hear it, listen to it, follow you, do the promo bit?
I'm at Friend Within everywhere. Yeah, the album's out on Tool Room. Find me on there. Come and speak to me on Twitter. I'm often on there, or Instagram.
I've not gone on Twitter for ages.
No.
I've
flipped between the two, really.
Twitter for me is just like, I get on there and I'm just like, oh my God, shut up. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, that did happen to me a bit the other day. Like, you know, my album had just come out. Well, I think I'd had like a good email in the morning. I'd woken up and saw this email. I was like, oh, yes, get in. I think it was like they were replaying my essential mix or maybe one or something like that. Then I went on Twitter and then I immediately was just pissed off with something. I was like, why have I done this? Why did I bother?
It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
The world was so much simpler before social media.
Yeah. But then like MySpace was a massive thing for me, the start of my career. You know, without that, I don't know where I'd be, really, just to get your music out there and connect with people.
Well, I think realistically, all of us without social media, we'd be fucked.
Mm.
Like, who was big before social media? like there was probably like 20 DJs in the whole world.
Yeah, it was like the residence thing as well, wasn't it? Like you said earlier, you know, he did B club nights,
yeah,
and that's kind of how I got in more into DJing and, you know, becoming a resident somewhere, was going to my local night,
yeah,
getting to know people there, and the speaking to the promoters, taking me mix CD every day, every month.
Pissing them off.
That was the way in at that point, but that's not the. If someone was asking my advice, oh, what? How do I start DJing now? I wouldn't have a bloody clue.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like the best way to do it, because you know, because for me it was totally different.
Yeah, because I think nowadays the best way to start is just to start your own club night, and build a community around yourself, right?
Yeah, the whole community aspect is still probably the most important part of it. You know, me going down to this club, meeting people. And that's where I met my now wife. Yeah. You know, it literally would change your life.
Yeah.
You know, going and speaking to people.
Doesn't happen so much, though.
No. I guess it's all started online now, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Even with dating and, you know, literally everything.
Yeah, because I was talking to a mate the other day and I got an old poster framed that was like from 2014 when I was promoting in Bristol, and I wouldn't ever class myself as a promoter, but I was like, I have to do something because otherwise I'm not going to do anything really. And even then I was like, I don't know anyone, I don't know any of the uni lot, I don't know any of the, like, the kids that actually want to rave, because it was even then, it was like a little bit more community based. Where now, I just feel like it's just headliner, headliner, headliner.
Yeah.
In our scene.
Hopefully,
anyway.
Maybe that will. Do you think that might come back a bit? You know, with people maybe not wanting to travel as far to places.
I think also what you're gonna get is there's artists, like even me, like I want to play in different places. And by playing in different places, you play for less money, and I'm fine with that. But it's just, you're kind of giving more value to younger promoters that are kind of trying to build something. And I think that's the thing, is building a community is so, so much more powerful than just headlining shows all around the place.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not as great for your bank balance, but long-term goals is so much better.
Yeah, because I think you'll have, you know, I've been through it, like you'll have all this hype behind you, like when I started Friend Within, you know, the first two, three, four years maybe, you know, you have all, everyone wants to write about you, course, and book you, but then that fades away. And you know, you need the community you've built up
by that point,
which I don't think I probably did well enough. I probably didn't do enough for that.
Well, I think when Friend Within, when you came up as Friend Within, it wasn't, social media was there, right? But you came out with some heavy hitters pretty quick.
Yeah, I think the music was, I was very, very proud of.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying earlier, it kind of came, the tracks came really easily as well. And I don't know how I did it.
Yeah, and it came out, but because they were so successful, it just put you in headliner standards straight away, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah, any sort of big festival in the UK that I was there.
Yeah.
You know, for at least, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But then someone else comes through, and then if, you know, if you don't have that sort of bunch of fans or community behind you, then you could sort of fade away.
Well, I think it's also, you just get older, right? Your fans get older, and your fans, it's how do you stay current with the 18 to 24 year olds?
Yeah, no, I've always been trying to fight that battle.
Yeah,
maybe instead of, I should have concentrated more on the people I was growing
with,
the fans who were growing up with. You know, I'm 41 now. I mean, should I be playing to like 18 year olds, or should I have maybe started my own night or something? That, you know, I think like Darius Sarossium is a really good example. Like, you know, he would, yeah, you have hype at some point, but you know what he's built around his club nights, and you know, he's got a great fan base.
Yeah.
I never really did that. I've always been about having to release more music to keep up. And
yeah, I'm the same as you, where I'm more music based than nights. But I think that's because I'm not a partier. I don't know about you, but we're not really. I didn't think you were, but we're not really partiers. And I think the people that do put on really good nights, like not the actual promoters, but the people that the DJs that put on really good nights, they're all about fucking partying and having a good time. And I think you need to have that, whether it's you or whether it's the person that does it with you.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's probably a good point there. Yeah.
It's interesting. Because like, look at like Jamie with like Paradise. Like that's a vibe. You can just tell that they're all just mates and they're all just fucking partying. Well, at the beginning, they're all just raving, and there's always somebody partying there, and they're all just like being one big family. It was the same with Dirty Bird at the beginning, or even when I kind of signed to them. Like it was just a crew of people that just wanted to party, like for days, and it. You feel it change when people get older. Like,
yeah,
everyone in like all the big guys in Dirty Bird, apart from Justin is doing his own thing, but they all stop drinking. And when everyone stopped drinking, it's just like you see the difference at the parties. you feel the difference because people are just like, play, crack on. Whereas when people are partying, they're there all night. Everyone's there all night. Everyone is having fun. It's different. It's very different.
I guess that's how it builds up, isn't it? When your fans see the DJs there all night and
all night, raving.
Get to chat with them. That's always what a big part of Dirty Bird looks like.
It always was. It always was. Like the festival. Like how many festivals do we play at that we just go and play and then leave? Like
all of them
and Dirty Bird Camp Out was the only festival that every DJ stayed for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what, and I think now it still happens, but it's not what it was. If you know what I mean, it's not that same, because in the small amount of time, let's say 6 years, in the small amount of time, things change. People get older, people grow up. Like I've got friends that like in like Chicago that they would come to every single show and we'd all like party together and just like have a proper good time. Now they're like buying farms in the countryside.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just different, but it's also how do you stay relevant? How do you, and I think by staying relevant, you have to do these like small shows. Mm. You have to play for the younger kids. And kind of build a scene in that scene.
Yeah. But then it also goes back to, do you need to keep having to reinvent yourself for the 18-year-olds?
I don't think you're reinventing yourself. I don't think you're reinventing yourself. I think it is literally just, they don't know. So until you give somebody something or teach somebody something, they don't know. They don't know what they're just going to go with what their mates, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, true.
Like we've all seen it. We've all had mates when we were younger, just bandwagon jumping with what's hot because their other mate is like trying to like meet a girl at a club. So they're all going to see Patrick Toppin or something like that, if you know what I mean. And then they love Patrick Toppin and then they're like, oh, I like this person. Or it kind of goes from that.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, it's not reinvention, is it? It's just making yourself available and saying, here I am.
This is who I am. Like, a lot of them have never heard. Like, there must be so many. Like, that's kind of how I go into my sets, is that none of these people know who I am. And I've got to make sure that by the end of this, like, at least 80% of the people know who I am or are going to remember who I am after this set.
Yeah. It's a good way to approach it, yeah. Especially if you're doing like those long sets as well.
It's fun.
I mean, yeah. I did do a few of them. I did a tour of like, 5 nights in a row.
Yeah.
Playing all night, which was a hell of a slog.
Yeah, that is long.
But especially one of those shows was the best one I've ever done. Mm. You know, it's in the little club.
And people will always remember that.
Yeah.
The people, there'd be a handful of people that went to that night that will still be talking about that night now.
Like, I found that I was a lot more restrained as well when I was DJing. Like, I didn't, if I was just booked somewhere to play for an hour, you know, midnight, I would have probably bashed it out for an hour. But on this tour, like, I felt like I didn't even really get going till a lot later. And I was really trying to build it up, and it was so enjoyable. I'm sure you probably feel the same as well.
It's the reason why I did it, because I was just so fed up with playing like an hour set, and you're just like, they're just getting the hitters, like you said, you just bash it out. And then it turns, because they're booking so many artists in one night, it is a night of just bashing it out. There's no like peaks and troughs. There's no like letting people like chill.
Yeah.
It's just every DJ with their ego trying to fucking be the best DJ of the night. That's simply what it is, really. We've got to be honest with ourselves. We've all got an ego of some sort, and we want everyone to love us more than anyone else. But
like playing a track where you think, well, they'll go and have a fag to this one.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like at the beginning when someone's walking into a club and you're playing the first 30, 45 minutes of mine were like all like ambient stuff. And like people walking into a club, hearing that, it kind of sets the night, if you know what I mean. It kind of sets it, and you're not going in to a club, which I think now you get a lot of like residents that aren't real true residents how it used to be, and kind of set the night. They get the Beatport top 10 and smash it out before anyone. So before you've got that kind of, you've not got somebody really setting it up for you. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. There's some great residents out there, but I think what's going to come of COVID kind of circling back round is you're going to get a lot of smaller parties pop up, and you're going to start building real scene with really good residents.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. And I feel like I'd want to go and support that happening, you know, where I live.
Be amazing. Yeah. And let's be honest, being in the UK, 3 hours drive from anywhere, really, unless you live either end of the country. Like, you're not that far from anywhere. 3 hours drive, it's not far. It's easy. And I think
people used to do that way more.
Exactly.
You know, you'd have like super clubs.
Yeah.
And one of my best mates, I remember before we went to uni, he did like 13 weeks in a row of going to like all the super clubs around the country.
Yeah.
And people certainly don't do that as much now.
No, because everyone's got massive things in their city and don't want to leave. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But man, I think it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to when we're back in the swing of things and back. I just hope it doesn't go back to how it was, because I think how it was isn't healthy for the scene, really. Because it's just going to get worse. It's like the same lineups everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? Every festival.
Every festival is the same. And as an artist that, like, I don't play much in the UK, but to kind of, if you're not in the clique of the UK or whatever scene you're in, if you're not in that clique and you don't have an in on that clique, you're never getting in. You're just always sat on the outside going, what the fuck? I don't get that. But
yeah, I'm always so surprised the way you mainly play in America and not over here that much.
It's because no fucker books me, mate.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what is so surprising. I don't know what else you have to do.
We're working at it. We're working it.
Yeah.
What about you? Because do you do much in America?
A bit. I've not done a lot, but I was due to actually go. I was doing the EDC Vegas.
Oh, in May,
which got obviously got cancelled back in May, and then it got moved to October, and that got cancelled. So I was just in the process of getting like renewing my visa.
Yeah,
over there, so that would have been for like 3 years. But that, obviously, is on hold at the moment.
You should get your visa, man.
Yeah, get once things like open up again.
I think I just saw a post that Pasquale put out, and they're like, they've put it in for May in the Nevada kind of whatever, whoever decides it in Vegas, whatever they can, if they can do it or not. So it could be interesting if they do go ahead with it this year.
Well, okay, yeah. I'd kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm still due playing.
I think they just put all the same artists on.
Okay.
Check with your agent. I'm not
really
playing.
Shouldn't I?
Yeah. But the likelihood of it being allowed to happen is pretty slim, but
I mean, I don't even know what the travel arrangements will be from here to America on quarantines
we're allowed to work. We're allowed to travel to work, but we at this moment in time, we're not allowed to travel to America. I think they're going to lift those soon. Mm. But we're allowed to travel to work. But then, yeah, we've got a quarantine when we get back, which is like, what's the fucking point of going?
Yeah. I've not been out of my house that much in the past year anyways. But then it depends what the quarantine would be. Would I have to be in a hotel?
10 days.
When I came back? Oh, stop that.
10 days in a hotel.
Nah, wouldn't fancy it. And then also, if I'm getting... You know, if I'd have got my visa last year, I would have basically wasted a year.
Yeah.
So until I can properly use it... I mean, I know it's a massive thing to play EDC Vegas. But if it was literally the one show and then I wouldn't be able to go back for a year...
It's not worth it.
It's not really... And so expensive to get a visa.
They're so expensive. It's just not worth it. If I didn't have my place out there and I've got to renew my visa. I'm going through the process of renewing it now. But if I didn't have the kind of things that I have out there, I wouldn't be doing it until I was touring full time.
Mm.
It just doesn't make any sense, really.
No. At all. No, it's not going to. Not going to make you money back on it, are you?
No. Well, especially when you've not really earned money for a year. And it's going to be maybe another 6 months until we're probably back potentially touring full time. If maybe 8 months, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no. Yeah, hopefully the 21st of June will...
Have you seen Europe?
Will happen.
Europe's going back into lockdown, though.
God, I know. Yeah, seeing they're in like wave three coming or third lockdown or something in France.
Just like,
but then we still got our borders are still open. You know, we're not making people quarantine from there. Like, what?
Are they not?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't get it.
It depends what list you're on, doesn't it? What if you're on the list where you can where you can travel? I don't know.
I don't understand it.
Don't want to read about it anymore.
I'm glad I'm not a politician, put it that way.
Yeah.
It's not a good year to be a politician, right?
No way. No. That's what they signed up for. They wanted the limelight, didn't they? They wanted to make these decisions, so I don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I just wouldn't ever want to put myself in that situation where every day, like, you're going to have somebody that likes you, but out of one person liking you, you're going to get 20 people fucking hating you.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they just do it for their career now, don't they? They be a politician for a bit, and then once they don't get voted in again, they go and work for some massive company and get paid a shitload of money.
Yeah, so that, especially in America, that happens a lot. Like, the amount of money they earn after being president or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, one sec. Don't know why that's working. There we go, we're back. Right, mate, let's wrap this up. We've just done an hour and a half, pretty much.
Yeah.
Smashed it. Thanks for coming mate. Let's do the Friend Within, at Friend Within. Go follow him. Go listen to his new album called Hope. Let's catch up soon when we can, mate.
Yeah, cheers, Will. Nice one.
Keep safe, mate. Take care. And that is a wrap. Absolutely loved it. Hope you did. If you did, please go share it with your mates. Tell them all about it. Hit subscribe, give us a little review in the comments section below. Keep safe. See you next time. Big love.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.